I always wear my mask and wash my hands after going home.
It's a good tuna, but I think I paid too much.
I am the king of the reek.
Welcome to the Japan What Podcast, episode 140. I am your host, Matthew PMBigelow.com. This is the podcast coming at you from the Tomihisa Cho Studios in Shinjuku, Tokyo, Japan, the armpit of Asia. Covering AI markets in Japan, society 5.0, migration, depopulation, rising conflict in the Middle East, and the supply chain wars. We thank you for joining this podcast today. Going to begin, we're just going to jump right into it. We're busy today, and the studio is only rented for so long. And we got all these things prepared, so we're just going to go right into it. This is kind of like a hacky comedian things to do, but Mainichi, Japan's national daily since 1922. Japan-bound U.S. plane makes safe emergency landing in L.A. after losing tire on takeoff. San Francisco. United States jetliner bound for Japan made a safe landing in Los Angeles on Thursday after losing a tire while takeoff from San Francisco. Video shows the plane losing one of the six tires on its left side main landing gear assembly seconds after takeoff. The tire landed in an employee parking lot at San Francisco International Airport, where it smashed into a car and shattered its back window before breaking through a fence and coming to stop in a neighboring lot. No one was injured. Fire engines stood by, and the flight carried 235 passengers and a crew of 14. The airline said that the plane, built in 2002, was designed to land safely when missing damaged tires. The passengers will be moved to another plane for the rest of the trip, United said. And, of course, this is becoming more of a thing. Have you noticed this, Mr. Listener or Ms. Listener? I'm like, what's going on with the airlines these days? Never used to see, like, we can expect crashes from time to time, but it just seems like there's a plethora of little tiny mishaps going on. Tires falling off, wingtips hitting each other in the bays, people getting sucked into jet engines. Has it always been this way? And why is there a sudden reportage about it? But Japan is becoming like an international hub of shitty tourism travel now because the yen is so low and people can just come here and film everything with their phones. And I'm kind of wondering, like, is this a signal that some sort of element of society is beginning to fray at the edges and it's affecting things? Like, this isn't engine failure. This is maintenance, you know? These are little tiny things. And I've even gone a few days in a row where, especially with like this news item here, the tire falling off. It's like, I read another one. I thought it was just a rewriting of the same news, but a different headline. Like, a tire incident causes fire at other airports. Something like that. I'm like, what? I didn't know that plane with the wheel thing. Oh, it's a different news story. So it's like, is there something going on here? Is something up? Something seems up to me. Do they want us? Do they? I don't know what they means, but is there a concerted effort by the climate change-ologists, the climate change-tologists, to not have us travel anymore? Like, they don't want us traveling, so they just fear-monger us with minor errors? Because if you plane crashes, it's always like, that's an anomaly. That'll never happen to me. But if you have 30 news articles a week about little tiny things where if it was just a little bit more, your baby might have died. One of those things. I'm like, I wonder. And are we inviting these problems into Japan? I don't know. But that's today's WTF WUT highlight. And that's the single right here. Last year, I was focusing a lot on eating the bugs.
I'm going to eat all the bugs.
Okay, you're just going to eat them one at a time, though, okay?
Okay. I've got one. I'm going to go catch that one.
No, finish the one that you have in your mouth first.
And there was a real push at the time to have everybody eat bugs. And the followed a format I soon came to realize. Didn't matter if it was an English website, Japanese website, conservative website, liberal website. It would be like this. Japan has always had a culture of eating bugs. And it would be like, these people, blah, 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 bugs, they ate them. And then they would have like a giant corporation come into like a school and say, that's why your culture eats bugs. So we're making a giant factory of crickets on the edge of your town. And you're going to find innovative ways to put them into your food and feed them to your grandparents. And then the kids would make like cricket pancakes and feed them to their grandparents. And the grandparents would say things like, wow, they're trying very hard, aren't they? Wink, wink. You know, we don't like this. And the argument was like, well, with the food collapse happening, was like, is it? We're going to need bugs because they grow really easily and we'll be able to eat tons of them every year and just have them everywhere all the time. And it's going to be great. But nobody bought them. And we've actually had a major victory against the bug pushers about this. This comes to us. I'm going to give a, there's two reports here because they're pushing. They are pushing this idea. They're not just going to give up. The idea that we will eat bugs is a very popular idea. And it's not just going to be forgotten about. There's been too much money invested into it and too much macabre level of like villainy of people like that just want to sit in front of a blue screen at some sort of convention that the world watches and be like, yes, we have a collapse of the food and now you eat the bugs and now we make the money. Eating crickets is at a crossroads due to headwinds, high hopes, deep-rooted resistance. This comes to us from Aichi Prefecture, from the Mainichi Shimbun, and we are actually taking this from the Japanese and translating it into English. The cricket diet, which is rich in nutrients and is expected to solve the human food crisis, sorry, which one, is facing growing oppositions and is at a crossroads. Many companies have entered the market one after another, but the market has not spread widely due to soaring raw material costs. I thought it was cheap and persistent consumer resistance. There has also been some heartless slander against the bug eaters, this podcast included. I consider a very like a just a tiny little nudge in the right direction from this podcast into the creating a fatal stab in the mandibles of this operation. And it seems that steady efforts to spread the word are needed. In November 2022, Tokushima Prefecture became the first country in Japan to use crickets in school lunches. The croquettes were made using powdered crickets by a company called Grillus, a Tokushima venture company that produces and develops crickets, and the sight of high school students eating them with great interest has become a hot topic of conversation. Mainly, why are you feeding our kids bugs? We're not paying exorbitant amount of taxes to send our kids to your schools so that you can say, you can't have peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. That's unhealthy. No, we will take care of it. Here you are, children. Bugs. Yeah, I don't think people are going to fly with that. So anyways, people don't like it. So what is happening now is that there's another push. Because again, I told you, they're not going to stop. High school students develop eco-friendly feed using crickets. UN recommended protein source for chickens. I never used to hate the UN. I was never this guy who's like, I thought, oh, you know, get together, stop war. Who needs another World War II? But now it's like the UN, we're going to make your kids eat bugs. Like, well, go screw yourself, UN. You don't need my money to do that. My kids will eat bugs if they want to. And the UN is not going to force them onto it. So this comes to us from the Asahi Shimbun, the digital version, and it's translated by Chrome. When I entered the training room at that high school, it smelled like rice bran flooring. There is a corner separated by a curtain next to the blackboard, and the light is floating from that area. When I opened the curtains, I saw a pile of transparent costume cases. Something dark moved inside the cases. Quote, I raise chickens to make chicken feed, end quote. This is obviously the reporter trying to elucidate a scene. This is the livestock training room of Kagoshima Prefectural Ichiki Agricultural High School, a independent research group made up of five second year students, and they take care of the crickets used for feed. The independent research group investigates and researches themes in the agricultural field from perspectives such as SDGs. It's like, I don't know who you are anymore. If there's anybody out there who's like, oh yeah, I love the SDGs, I love the UN, and I love NGOs. These are just people that are out there doing good in the world. I'm like, these are three driving forces that are, I'm determined to be like enemies of humanity. I regrettably say that. NGOs, activists that receive government money to do government things, they're basically mercenaries. SDGs, UN insane goals where people get lots of money to pursue goals that will never happen. And then like the UN is like, we want to stop war, but that's why we have countries like Saudi Arabia on our women's board. It's like, what are you talking about? Anyways, so the school has perspectives such as SDGs in business, and they present their findings in a contest. The trigger was the voice of concern from poultry farmers. One of the themes they have worked on so far is to raise Satsuma chickens, a natural monument and local endemic species. Concerned that the number of breeding animals in the prefecture was decreasing, I wonder if that has to do with the amount of so-called bird flu that had been so-called spreading. They researched their habits and developed an easy breeding system. Anyways, it goes on from there. It's a paid article, but instead of forcing the crickets on the people, now they want to force the crickets on the chickens. But do chickens need like a special cricket diet? Like, don't chickens just eat bugs? If you want to feed bugs to the chickens, don't you just let them wander around and find the bugs? You could even throw a bunch of crickets on the ground. They would probably find them and eat them. Well, I don't understand what this place is doing. Why do they need to make chicken feed out of crickets? It seems like they have a whole bunch of extra stock lying around. Humans ain't eating it, so we may as well feed it to the chickens. I would eat chickens raised on naturally grown crickets. I wouldn't care. But how do you feel about the UN funding kids to make crickets into chicken feed and then sell them to the farms? Does that sound logical to you? Or does it just sound like needless meddling? You could say, well, the kids are learning about this, that, and the other thing. It's like, I don't know what you're trying to do to those kids. I don't want anything to do with it. I would rather, if my son was involved with this, what would I say? I would say, give me all the documentation so I could use it for my podcasts. How about that?
I'm going to eat all the bugs.
Okay, you're just going to eat them one at a time though, okay?
Okay. I got one. I'm going to go catch that one.
No, finish the one that you have in your mouth first.
All right, so that's the, we're making great tailwinds into the cricket destruction feed and food and all of that. It's going to happen naturally. And what can we say? We're going to rip the legs off and cook it underneath the high beam lens of a magnifying glass held in the sun. That's what we're going to do. Next, we're going to take a look at de-dollarization and Bitcoin in Japan.
Here we go.
Now, the reason I cover de-dollarization from the perspective of a Japanese podcast is that I am a Canadian living in Japan. And that means I am very much tied to the U.S. system. As a younger man, I never gave it much thought. And the idea that the dollar would go away would be not really considered. We would just kind of say, ah, America with their wars, blah, blah, blah. But it was like once you start thinking that the rest, many parts of the world are considering and in fact endeavoring to move on from the U.S. dollar. And I kind of think it to myself as now a man in his 40s, and I kind of go, well, if the U.S. is tied to the dollar and Canada is tied to the dollar, we see a massive decrease in the use of dollars and we see the weaponization of the dollar, what is that going to mean? It's going to mean a lot of things. And we have a massive amount of people not being born in the G7 countries that rely on the dollar, economy, the Bretton Woods Agreement, the oil, the petrodollar, and all that. And we see BRICS coming in on the scene, which represents a massive amount of the next wave of global population. And they seem to have their ideas focused on currency and energy production. Well, the G7, I don't know why, they're obsessed with turning it all off and having like a solar farm and offshore wind and things like that. Solve all of our problems. And you're like, well, what's going on here? So if I have like a solar panel and a windmill and I'm competing against people that have power plants and energy and oil and drilling and like energy infrastructure, who's going to win here? What's going to be more valuable in the future? And you can kind of guess where I'm going with that. And Japan is very much tied into the G7. During the Russians invaded Ukraine or had their special military operation in Ukraine to defend their Russian compatriots there, however you want to say it, I'm not taking sides. Japan still had a lot of Russian trade and energy agreements at the time, and they're kind of being forced out of it. And the more Japan takes the side of the United States, which it must do, the less chance it has to get in on the action with BRICS. So this comes to us from Bitcoin.com. Kremlin reveals plans to create a politics-free, quote, BRICS blockchain-based payment system. When I was at SoftBank, some of my students were involved in creating blockchain payment solutions using international, telecoms infrastructure as a base for money to go back and forth between people in each country and have it tallied. It was kind of an anti-Bitcoin thing. And they're going to make some headway into it. I'm not sure what they're going to do about it because of the difference in financial systems around the world. Like, you can't just have the Japanese finance system copied and pasted into the Vietnamese and then into the Belarusian and then have it all smoothly flow through each other's systems via a telecom network. The blockchain can record it all, but the banks aren't going to agree on the terms and the technicalities, and the lawyers get involved and stuff like that. So I kind of have some backing, some standing in this area. And I did that for years. So let's take a look here. Yuri Ushakov, an aide of Russian President Vladimir Putin, revealed plans to create a digital blockchain payment system for the BRICS bloc. Now, this could be done relatively easily because it's government to government and probably payment for things such as energy and oil and stuff like that, not individual payments or transfer systems. Anyways, Ushakov remarked that the countries of the group would benefit from implementing such a system for the use of governments, common people, and businesses, stating that it would be convenient, cost-effective, and free of politics. Now, the blockchain, even though it's a largely now derided technology, I mean, so many people thought that you could just say blockchain and it would solve all your problems. But what it does is that it creates a ledger system that's available to be viewed by anybody in real time. Used correctly in the correct technology stack, such as Bitcoin, it makes a lot of sense. Because if you have very corrupt systems, you just need one official with one printed document in a file cabinet somewhere to start fudging the stats, and then nobody else will see it. But if you have a blockchain system and somebody starts fudging the stats, it can be seen by other people that you're fudging the stats. So the idea is that if the ledger is open and not human controlled, you have the ability to see what's happening to it in real time and thereby improve accuracy and reduce corruption if it's implemented in the right way. Obviously, most people just use it as a marketing gimmick. It's blockchain with AI. Invest in us. And then all your money goes away. Anyways, Russia announces plans for blockchain-based BRICS payment system. currently Russia was, this is me, Matthew Bain, pmbigelow.com. Russia was kicked out of the SWIFT system. And the SWIFT is supposed to be like the end all and be all of international payment systems, but it's using a lot of older technology. And what if these newer players, such as Russia and China and Brazil and everything like that, can access this new technology relatively easily and then compete against the legacy technology against it, like podcasts versus legacy news media or something like that? Or what could it be? Anyway, something like that. Russia is spearheading the development of a blockchain-based payment system for the BRICS bloc, integrated by Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, and Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, Iran, Egypt, and Ethiopia. Yuri Ushakov, a foreign policy aide of President Vladimir Putin, explained the goal behind the new system would be to improve the resistance of the payment rails between the countries of the group. This would diminish the BRICS' reliance on the U.S. dollar. In an interview with TASS, Ushakov declared, quote, "We believe that creating an independent BRICS payment system is an important goal for the future, which we would be based on the state-of-the-art tools such as digital technologies and blockchain." Furthermore, Ushakov detailed that using the proposed system would have to be convenient for governments, common people, and businesses, as well as cost-effective and free of politics, and so on. He hinted that it would be for the purported usage of cross-border trade settlements. I'm not going to read the whole thing because it's quite, it's not going to be too lengthy, but it goes on. So that's going to be available for you, the listener, at MatthewPMBigelow.com. I put all of the notes, a lot of photos, and other things up at the website if you want to check it as well. Also, if you find yourself not having time or not in the position to listen to a podcast, but having time to read the review of the links and the notes and all of the articles at MatthewPMBigelow.com, kind of are accumulated and archived there as a way to understand current trends in AI, Indo-Pacific, rising conflict, Taiwan, and other places. So you can check it out there if you're interested. All right. So that's the BRICS de-dollarization. Having a bunch of countries decide to move into blockchain for cross-border settlements is a big deal, by the way. Notice how Japan and is not mentioned in there. Next one we're going to take a look at is more of a Japanese style of thing. And again, it's from bitcoin.com. And I didn't know this, but there's Mercari. And that's a e-commerce giant. It's like a buyer-seller platform. If you want shirts or video games or, you know, consumer products, people will list their items on Mercari, and then you can buy them from there via app or browser or something like that. But anyways, this e-commerce giant is aiming to accept BTC payments. Largely considered, there's a massive Bitcoin movement in Japan, but the average person still views it as toy money. My wife included. She's smart. She's very smart and like really smart. But still the stigma is there that Bitcoin is like a fake money. And I don't think it is anymore. One of Japan's biggest online marketplaces, Mercari, has announced that soon its customers will be able to make payments using Bitcoin, BTC. When was this published? January 9th, 2024. According to Nikkei Report, Melcoin, a subsidiary of the online commerce giant, is set to process all payments made via BTC. This means vendors will only receive their payments in the form of yen. In addition, users will be able to buy and sell BTC using proceeds from online sales. Mercari's pivot to Bitcoin payments comes almost a year after it launched a Bitcoin trading service and more than 3 months after it reportedly hit the 1 million users milestone. The milestone was achieved as Mercari confirmed that some 80% of its crypto users had no previous crypto trading experience. And that's the other reason I wanted to introduce this. Mercari is used by people selling their clothes or their gear or on an online marketplace. Now, suddenly, all of those people have access to Bitcoin. You don't have to be some nerd or some weirdo in the corner of the internet. It's just there for you to access and learn about and use. And the reason why this could be a de-dollarization is that it could be an internal, like domestic de-dollarization movement where more and more younger Japanese people who have not a lot of good options ahead of them perhaps might realize that the increasing value of Bitcoin, and Bitcoin's been going up a lot recently, but it's in terms of US dollars that it's going up. And because the Japanese yen is trading so low now, when Bitcoin goes up like a few thousand dollars in US, it goes up way more in value in Japan comparative to the previous year. So before, when like Japan and US had parity, it wasn't at parity, but it was at near parity in 2018, 2019. Now it's $1 used to get you 100 yen US dollar. Now $1 can get you pretty much almost at this time pushing $101.5. So when Bitcoin goes up in US dollars, it goes up even more in value compared to the Japanese yen. So as the Japanese yen loses more and more of its value as the Bitcoin value goes up, all of these younger people in Japan using the marketplace Mercari to sell and buy goods might start to see the value of, it's not a cryptocurrency, I don't believe it's the value of Bitcoin. And if that would be interesting, wouldn't it? It's just like scaling out or looking into the future. Japan's youth becomes a massive store of value of Bitcoin. And then when the dollar tanks and the Japanese markets like collapse that are all tied to the failing US dollar, if it should it fail, you'll have this resilience in the Japanese youth saying, ha-ha, we have our Bitcoin. And then they exclude all of the elderly people from their economy who never believed them and their movements. I would like to see that. So that's the de-dollarization movement for today. One more minor thing that I'm not going to read too much about is the U.S. Embrace of remote working empties offices and weighs on banks. This could lead to de-dollarization in a way that would be unpredictable if the downtown cores of most American cities continue to crumble, and with the rise of crime and migration and illegal migration, millions and millions of people flooding into the cities, with the amount of people choosing to work from home, the amount of commercial real estate is going to continue to increase to be unoccupied. And what happens then is that the valuation of those buildings goes down, or the expected return on the investment into those buildings doesn't come to fruition. And the first many cases in the United States, according to this document, the regional banks are going to take the brunt. And if a lot of those banks fail, well, then a lot of those commercial ventures fail. But those commercial ventures might then be bought up for pennies on the dollar by places like BlackRock or other such massive investment firms, or even by larger banks within the United States. But then those banks kind of absorb a lot of the toxic assets involved with it as well. And if you have enough bank collapses going on in the United States, there's going to be a larger contingent of people who view the U.S. dollar as a riskier asset from just purely from the perspective of domestic valuation. It's a bit of a reach, and I'm not saying that that's happening, but with the BRICS continuing to develop their systems, we see kind of a fraying. I use that word a lot. That's kind of how I view a lot of the G7 now. It's fraying at the edges. There's a lot of fraying going on the G7 side of the economy. Not to say that those other countries don't have their own problems and issues either, but I'm just focusing on that for today. So that will be de-dollarization with Via, the Kremlin, with their blockchain payment systems proposed for BRICS nations, as well as an internal potential displacement of US dollar by having young Japanese entrepreneurs on websites choosing to interact with each other in Bitcoin instead of Japanese yen, which is also tied to the US dollar via the central banks and all the fiat currency due to the Bretton Woods Agreement and the petrodollar. Let's continue on to the next topic.
Here we go.
I'm going to read a little bit of Japan Society 5.0. I'm not sure how much I'm going to get into it today, because we're pressed for time.
The fourth industrial revolution will enable us to create a new society. Artificial intelligence will transform the big data collected through the Internet of Things into new wisdom. Society 5.0, a technology-based, human-centered society.
So that's, of course, the Japanese government's promotional video for Japan Society 5.0, an all-encompassing look on how Japan society can transform to Japan Society 5.0 using AI technologies and so on. Very much tied in with the World Economic Forum, by the way. But we're not going to look too much at Japan Society 5.0 today. But a couple of ones is new ride-sharing service to start in Osaka this fall to be rolled out nationwide in 2025. Uber never really kicked off. You can see Uber a little bit now. But most ride-sharing never really went anywhere in Japan. That's because the taxi industry is intensely robust. And they have very strong unions that apparently have some political clout as well. But if you've ever been in like 30 taxis in Japan, there's a lot of super aging taxi drivers. And we're kind of seeing perhaps the beginning of the end of their power. When I was at SoftBank, SoftBank invested in Didi, a Chinese ride-sharing network, very popular in China, tried to bring it into Japan. And pretty frequently, there would be protests by the taxi industry outside of the building that I was working in. And so it never really went anywhere, but we'll see how it goes. Anyways, new ride-sharing service to start in Osaka this fall to be rolled out nationwide in 2025. If you're interested in that, it'll be posted at MatthewPMBigelow.com. Now, here's one part of weirdo AI trends that I really just find super confusing. Okay, you want to use, AI surge pricing and mapping and routing and driver acquisition and figuring out which driver is closest to which one to suggest a route and do all that, blah, 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 blah. I kind of get it. But then there's this other aspect of AI activism, and it just boggles my mind. This comes to us from the Japan Times. And now is our chance to govern AI for women's empowerment. What? What is this headline? Why is it our chance to govern AI? How do you govern AI? Why is it our chance? And why for women's empowerment? It's a very unusual, like there's a lot of activism. It's like, oh, here's this new technology. Let me control it. Let me control it. I want to do with it what I want to do. And you make it do what I want you to tell it to do. And then you do it. And then it does it for me and what I want it to do. Can you do that yourself? It doesn't matter if you're a man, woman, whatever, blah, blah, blah. No, I want you to do it for me. Last year, the United Nations Commission on the Status of Women convened global stakeholders. That's a Klaus Schwabian term, World Economic Forum, to examine the progress made on gender equality through the lens of innovation, technology, and digital education. Among the commission's many insightful conclusions was its recognition of the promises and perils of artificial intelligence. Although AI has vast potential to transform how employment, public services, and education benefit women and girls, without equal access to technology, what? Who doesn't have equal access to and role in shaping it, AI will likely perpetuate existing biases, discrimination, and inequality. It's like, what? Okay. These are the crazy people in the AI sector who don't view it as a technology. They view it as some sort of intelligence. And there's very silly people. And it could be women's empowerment, AI for women's empowerment. Our chance. Now is our chance to govern AI for climate change awareness. Now is our chance to govern AI for what's another thing for Ukraine. It does. It's the current thing. It doesn't really mean anything. It doesn't really go anywhere. It's like we want it and we want it now, and we're going to use it and you're going to do it for us. It's kind of the way it comes across. And it's always a UN type thing. Last one will be Tokyo startup looks to AI to boost gastrointestinal cancer detection. AI for medical is one of the strongest fields option available to us. then I've engaged with some ideas online or on Twitter or on X or whatever, where if the database is always connected to like Microsoft via ChatGPT or whatever, you're never sure what information you're giving back. So I hope that a lot of these medical institutions that end up utilizing AI on a more and more prevalent basis do so with a local AI, with an intranet AI, with something that is not connected to the outside world, where the people querying or asking things inside of the hospital, that data isn't sent anywhere unless somebody wants it to be sent in somewhere. For example, a patient from hospital A is going to hospital B. Maybe hospital A sends that information to hospital B in that case, something like that. But just to have everybody using ChatGPT or something of the like, just giving every kind of sensitive information imaginable to Microsoft and Bill Gates and all of them, it's very dangerous. But it says, at the AI Medical Service, a Tokyo-based startup developing an AI-based endoscopic diagnostic support system, is convinced of the technology's capabilities and aims to prove its effectiveness. And it says gastrointestinal cancers are a major cause of cancer death worldwide. And the startup says this is largely due to the inability to detect them at an early stage. This is behind a paywall, so I'm going to end it there. But the reason I'm kind of putting this into today's show is to show, like, we have the ride-sharing service. Okay, well, it's not AI, but it's Japan Society 5.0. And usually these days it uses some sort of AI in its stack for efficiency or routing or something like that. Now is our chance to govern AI for women's empowerment. What? But then we have Tokyo startup looks to boost AI for gastrointestinal cancer detection. Well, that makes sense. So the Japan Society 5.0 has two very different camps in it. One is occupied by elitist UN SDG-driven ideologues, and the other are driven by technical people who use technology to solve technical problems and provide technical solutions to the technicians that need them. And they're in very different camps from each other. They don't borrow each other's milk. They live in completely different worlds. And in fact, you might have these women from the UN AI sector kind of go, oh, you're at the AI medical thing? Oh, neat. Well, we're using it for women's stuff. They go, oh, okay, well, fine. Well, we're using it for gastrointestinal. Oh, that sounds very interesting. Good luck and bye. And that's it. They never overlap in the way that we just overlapped right now. Not at all. Not ever. That's Japan Society 5.0 for today.
The fourth industrial revolution will enable us to create a new society. Artificial intelligence will transform the big data collected through the Internet of Things into new wisdom. Society 5.0, a technology-based, human-centered society.
All right. Have you considered donating to the Japan What podcast? Of course you have. It's easy. Use PayPal. Go to paypal.me/JapanWUT. We're also part of the podcasting 2.0 infrastructure. Get yourself a new podcast app and get rid of that legacy podcasting app. Those big tech people, they hate you. Podcasting 2.0, we love you. It allows users to donate satoshis, that's micropayments for the Bitcoin Lightning Network, from directly from your GetAlbi wallet right into the podcaster of your choice if they got the right setup hookup. So check out Podverse app, check out Fountain app. There's a lot more. Podcastapps.com, and get yourself a new app and join in on the fun. You can also go to MatthewPMBigelow.com. That's MatthewPMBigelow.com to check out the links, check out the photos, drive us some traffic at the very least, and check out the donation options there. We appreciate the service. We appreciate the fun. We appreciate the support. Thank you very much. All right, let's take a look at, are we going to do the supply chain war? Let's go war.
Die for the war. Evermore and more. Die for the good. For the good. Die for the war. Die for the war.
All right. Well, we don't have much time. What am I going to do here? The war. Too much war. It seems like it's calming down, but it's itching back up. Basically, okay, let's take a look at logistics sharing. We'll do this one. We'll keep it domestic. Going international right now is just simply not a choice. Wish it was. Always being stuck in Japan on the Japan What podcast. Oh, jeez. This comes to us from the Nikkei.com. Japanese one, and I'm translating it with the Chrome app. Logistics sharing that breaks common sense. 42 companies from different industries collaborate. The 2024 logistics problem means that goods cannot be transported adequately. Two major factors that have led to the crisis are a shortage of truck drivers and a low loading rate, with 60% of trucks carrying air. Next, Logistics Japan, a company that has been working to solve these two issues, is producing results. Started in 2018 as a wholly owned subsidiary of Hino Motors, that's also Toyota, a total of 19 companies, including shippers and logistics subsidiaries such as Asahi Group Japan, Nissin Foods Holdings, and Bridgestone, logistics companies such as Konoike Transport and Suzio, and banks from the financial industry such as Mitsubishi UFJ Bank, will invest in the project and also provide human resources and know-how. In addition, shippers of foodstuffs, daily necessities, and other goods, as well as logistics companies, will also join, and a total of 42 companies will continue to create a new transportation sharing system. The key lies in double-linked trucks and consolidated loading. The business gradually expanded through repeated demonstration experiments, and sales in 2012 reached 422 million yen. Although the project is currently in the red, as the number of participating companies is increasing, the company aims to more than triple the number of double-coupled trucks from the current 9 in order to return a fiscal profit in 2022. Well, the reason I'm introducing this into the supply chain wars, it could also be in Japan Society 5.0, is that there's a massive amount of truckers that are potentially going to go out of business or who stand to lose a lot of overtime pay. And the industry is looking to digitize a lot of it, and they want to do so with drive sharing. And a lot of this also comes with the idea of tracking and moving into using quantum computers in Japan's supply chain network to simply increase the efficiency of not having a bunch of empty trucks running around. Could you imagine, like, if there's tons of empty trucks and there's also tons of truckers making overtime on those empty trucks, there's some sort of issue. They're trying to resolve it with logistics know-how, and we'll see how it can go. But there's also the other idea that the 2024 problem in logistics. This is just a quick summary, but it's because the 2024 problem in logistics refers to the logistics delays that are expected to result from two regulations related to truck driver working hours, both set to take effect in 2024, April. The first regulation that could be responsible for this issue in the act of the arrangement of related acts to promote work system reform. And the second regulation is the revised notice of improvement standards. Nomura Research Institute analyzed the situation under these two regulations in comparison with projections of what would happen if they were not implemented. And in January 2023, the institute released its results showing that by 2030, again, UN goal, 2030 SDGs, these two regulations could reduce the volume of transportable cargo by roughly 35% nationwide. And I'm going to end it there. So that's going to be the podcast for today. So I'm including that in the supply chain wars because there's a current war on truckers, but there's also a current war on empty cargo. And there's also kind of secretly a war against using integrated digital technologies in Japan. So by forcing the issue to hand, they might be able to force the industry to accept new standards and to implement new procedures. I've seen a lot of this stuff employ. It uses geofencing, lifetime tracking. And of course, once all of these elderly or older drivers retire, the companies and corporations will just fill them up full of sensors and surveillance technology to improve the efficiency where they think the efficiency should improve. I'm half behind it, half not behind it. I'm a fence sitter on this issue. We'll see where it goes, but it's going there anyways. That's it. You found it. The Japan What Podcast coming at you from the Tomihisacho Studios in Shinjuku, Tokyo, Japan, the armpit of Asia. You've been listening to this podcast. Thank you for listening. Take it easy and see you next time. That's a giant ja mata ne.
You.